Peter Wimsey.
Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter and Peter Jones as Bunter, with Patricia Routledge as the Dowager Duchess of Denver. Clouds of Witness by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 8 episodes by Peter Jones and Tanya Leven. Episode 4, Mary Quite Contrary. Lord Peter Wimsey is investigating the death of Dennis Cathcart, for which his brother, the Duke of Denver, stands accused of murder. His investigations in Yorkshire and those of his friend Inspector Parker in Paris suggest that his sister, Lady Mary Wimsey, who was engaged to Cathcart, did not tell the truth at the inquest on the dead man. Mary is now ill in bed, and their mother, the Dowager Duchess of Denver, has arrived in Yorkshire.
You ought to have been there at the assizes, Peter.
I'm sorry, Mother.
But so you should be. When Gerald was what the judge called produced in court, his poor little face was so strained.
Barnaby.
He seemed to look round for the family, and I'm very pleased we were there.
Look, Mother, I explained that I didn't attend because I knew it was mere routine.
Even so, for Gerald's sake...
Look, I was doing other things for Gerald's sake.
You were?
Of course, Mother. Look, I'll tell you about them later. First of all, I want you to go up and see Mary.
Just what I meant to do. But now... Aren't you interested in what's happened?
Well, of course, dear, but I already know. They brought in a true bill against Gerald and passed everything over to the House of Lords.
Exactly. The judge admitted that he was incompetent.
Incompetent, dear, to try a peer.
Looked just incompetent to me. Anyway, the Lord Chancellor is to be informed and he will make all the arrangements.
He started that days ago.
Oh, what ridiculous snobs they are. I must go up and see Mary.
Look, there is something I want you to ask her about.
Yes? What is it?
Well, so long as you can do it without upsetting her...
Oh, don't worry too much about that.
Well, I would like to find out more about a lucky charm and a tortoiseshell comb I believe Mary and Cathcart bought in Paris.
Lucky charm?
She gave it to him when they were over there. Quite an expensive mascot with diamonds.
It can't have been very effective or he'd still be alive. Leave her to me.
Shall I come up with you?
No. Dr. Thorpe is coming later on, and I'd rather talk to her on my own.
Yes. Yes, all right, dear. Well, I'll be down here, so send for me if you want, eh?
Well, Mary, it's not much use your lying in the dark saying nothing. It would help if Dr. Thorpe could make a diagnosis.
But it isn't an illness. It's just strain and worry.
Apart from tearfulness, exhaustion, and lack of appetite... What are the symptoms?
High temperature.
Strain and worry shouldn't cause a rise in temperature. A
ghastly feeling of nausea.
Vomiting?
Frequently.
What does Dr. Thorpe prescribe?
Rest.
I think he's an old fool.
He's looked after me all my life.
He'll be here any minute now. I want to ask you one or two questions.
No, Mother, I don't feel well enough.
Nonsense. Your brother is charged with murder. You may be able to help.
How can I? I'm ill.
Not that ill. What about that jewellery you bought in Paris?
I can't remember.
You were in Paris last February?
Yes.
Well, then, you and Dennis bought some jewellery.
What jewellery?
You tell me.
He bought me a tortoiseshell comb.
Oh, sounds like Dr. Thorpe coming. Oh, yes. Yes, it is. What a ridiculous-looking horse.
Please don't pull the curtains back. The light hurts my eyes.
How much did the comb cost?
I don't remember.
You have the bill?
No, it was a present.
What else did you buy?
Nothing else.
Nothing for Dennis?
No.
A good luck charm?
No.
Where was the jeweller's?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
No. My head aches dreadfully.
Oh, don't think about it.
I think I'm going to be sick.
There's something you aren't telling me, Mary. I don't doubt that you feel sick and depressed. But you mustn't turn away from the truth and into an unhealthy self-concern.
Dr. Thorpe's arrived.
Morning, Your Grace. How's our little girl this morning?
She's 28, Doctor, and not little.
Like me to come in?
No. Close the door.
You see, I was thinking...
I'll call you if I want you. Now then, Doctor, what is wrong with her?
Well, she's had a nervous breakdown, a shock. Naturally, she'd want to be alone.
The temperature, Doctor.
Yes, I must admit, I'm baffled by the way it goes up and down.
And these fits of sickness.
Well, nerves can cause that.
Nerves? Nerves don't cause fever. Take her temperature now.
Yes, I was just about to.
Good.
Now, Lady Mary, open your mouth, under your tongue. That's it. Been able to eat anything?
Mm.
Drinking liquids?
Mm. In my day, we called this kind of behavior hysterics and naughtiness. We didn't let gals pull the wool over our eyes. There was never any talk of neurosis or reflexes, or repressions, suppressions, depressions. If you ask me, there's a fairly simple explanation. Is your horse all right out there?
Eh? Yes, I think he's perfectly all right.
Ah. Doctor!
Your Grace?
I don't think your horse is all right. Come over here. Is it a very old horse?
Well, not very old. May I read the thermometer?
You should have a motor car.
I'll have a thermometer now. Thank you, my dear.
I think you're going to find it's gone up.
She doesn't look feverish. My word, you're right. 103.4.
Come outside, Doctor.
Yes, yes, of course, Your Grace.
Peter, what are you doing?
Waiting for you, actually.
She's bluffing.
Her temperature indicates there is something wrong.
That's what she's bluffing about. When we went over to the window to look at your horse, I glanced at her reflection in the dressing table mirror. She was applying the thermometer to the hot water bottle.
Surely you were mistaken.
I were. Then she is faking.
Good heavens. I'm not normally taken in so easily. But Mary is, after all, a lady.
I've never heard such rubbish. Come along. I want to look in the bathroom.
The bathroom?
Ah, good idea. You think she's taking something to induce the sickness?
I think it's likely. Peter, have a look at the medicine cabinet.
Yes, Mother. Nine. Bath salts. Elements, embrocation, salvolatile, crucian salts. Hello, what's this at the back? Ipecacuanha.
The family bottle, and it's three quarters empty.
Great heavens. That's why she vomits.
Well done, Mother. It's easy to see which side of the family has the detective instinct.
But, Peter, why should Mary want to make herself ill?
That is what I am trying to find out, Charles. And I haven't told you the most unpleasant bit of the lot.
What's that?
Bunter went round to the analyst in Gower Street this morning and brought me the results. You remember I sent him a stain off one of Mary's skirts.
Yes.
Well, he has confirmed that the blood is human. And I'm afraid it's Cathcart's.
Cathcart?
Well, she must have noticed it. The stain was 3 or 4 inches across, according to Bunter.
And she won't say anything.
I'm afraid not. So let's go over it. Now, Wednesday night, everyone comes in, dines, and goes to bed except Cathcart, who rushes out and stays out.
Right.
At 11:50, the gamekeeper hears a shot, which may very well have been fired in the clearing, where, well, let us say the accident took place. Now, at 3 a.m., Jerry comes home from, well, somewhere or other, and finds the body. As he is bending over it, Mary arrives in the most apropos manner from the house, fully dressed in her coat and cap, skirt and walking shoes. Now, what is her story?
That she was awakened by a shot at 3 o'clock.
But nobody else heard that shot at 3 o'clock.
There was no shot.
Look, I know that, old Parker, but I'm examining the discrepancies in her story. She said that she didn't give the alarm because she thought it was probably poachers. But if it was poachers, it would be absurd to go down and investigate. So she explains that she thought it might have been burglars.
Well, that's possible. It could have been burglars.
Granted. But how does she dress to go down and look for burglars?
Yeah, well, it was a wet night.
Oh, my dear chap. Look, if it's burglars you're looking for, you don't expect to go and hunt for them round the garden. Anyhow, fancy a present-day girl who rushes about bareheaded in all weathers, stopping to put on all her clothes for a burglar hunt. Oh, damn it all, Charles, it won't wash.
They said it was a wet night, so she went to the conservatory...
Made a beeline for it. Straight to the corpse as if she knew exactly where to look. She sees Gerald stooping over it, and what does she say? Does she ask who it is? No. She exclaims, "Oh, God, Gerald, you've killed him." And then she says, as if on second thoughts, "Oh, it's Dennis." Now, does that strike you as natural?
No. But it suggests to me that it wasn't Cathcart she expected to see, but someone else. Cathcart's death, at any rate, was a surprise.
Yes. Yes, now we must remember that. Right. Gerald sends her up for help. She wakes up Freddy and the Pettigrew Robinsons, and then what?
She locked herself into her room.
Correct. And shortly afterwards, joined the others in the conservatory, wearing a cap and coat and walking shoes, but over pajamas and bare feet.
So you're suggesting that Lady Mary was already awake and dressed at 3 o'clock, and that she went out by the conservatory door with her suitcase, expecting to meet the murderer of her... Oh, damn it, Peter.
Now, we needn't go as far as that, you know. We decided that she didn't expect to find Cathcart dead.
No. Well, she went presumably to meet somebody.
All right. Well, shall we say, pro tem, she went to meet number 10.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when she saw the Duke stooping over Cathcart, she... Oh, my joke, Peter. When she said you killed him, she meant number 10. She thought it was number 10's body.
Of course! Oh, got up. Fool I am. Then, recollecting that she was not supposed to know who it is, she said, "Oh, it's Dennis."
Then when she saw that it wasn't the body of number 10, she realized that number 10 must be the murderer. So her game was to prevent anybody knowing that number 10 had been there.
She'd shoved her suitcase behind the cacti, and then when she went upstairs, she pulled it out again and hid it in the oak chest on the landing.
Cacti, silver sand.
Exactly.
It fits. Then... she knocked up the Pettigrew Robinsons, right. Now, she'd be in the dark. They'd be flustered. They wouldn't notice exactly what she had on.
And as soon as she could, she rushed back to her own room and took off the skirt she'd worn when she knelt at Cathcart's side. Then she got into her pajamas, keeping on the cap, coat and shoes, because that was what people had seen her wearing already. Then she concocted the burglar story for the coroner's benefit.
That's about it.
Ah, I suppose she was so desperately anxious to throw us off the scent of number 10 that it never occurred to her that her story was going to implicate her own brother.
But she realized it at the inquest, and that explains why she grasped at the suicide theory.
Yes. And when she realized she was simply saving number 10 at the possible cost of her brother's life, she lost her head and took to her bed.
No, she refuses to give any evidence at all.
Ah. Well, it seems to me there's an extra allowance of fools in my family.
Anyway... clears the poor girl, that's the main thing.
Now, she isn't the accused, Charles. I want something that will clear Gerald.
Telegram, my lord.
Thank you, Bunter. Party traced London. Seen Marylebone Friday. Further information from Scotland Yard. Police Superintendent Gosling, Ripley. Oh, I say, good, eh? Now we're getting down to it. Stay here. We'll do there as a good man in case anything turns up. I'll pop round to the yard and see the head man. Bunter will arrange some dinner for you, won't you, Bunter?
Certainly, my lord. There's a brace of cold pheasants.
Well, what about that strawberry flan from Gunter's I left the large piece after lunch?
I disposed of it, my lord.
I see, yes. Well, give him a bottle of the Chateau Margaux, which is really rather decent, Charles. I'll see you later. Well, thanks very much, Sir Andrew. I really mustn't take up any more of your time.
That's all right, Lord Peter. Here at Scotland Yard, we don't keep normal office hours any more than do the criminals.
Well, you've been very kind.
Good. Well, we'll leave it there for now. The man was undoubtedly seen at Marylebone on the Friday morning, and though we have unfortunately lost him again at the moment, I have no doubt we shall have our hands on him again quite soon.
Every confidence, Sir Andrew, as ever. Between us, we ought to be able to dig up something.
I'm sure. I'll take you to the door. And if you happen to run across this character yourself, then let us know.
I never deny your good fortune, or it may be good judgment, in running across the criminals we may be wanting.
Well, I like to think it's judgment, of course, but one always needs a modicum of luck. But believe me, if I do catch him, I shall be round to you in a jiffy.
Thanks very much. I hope you're satisfied that we're doing all we can. Can you get a cab?
Yes. And thanks again for everything. Taxi?
Surely, it's Lord Peter Wimsey.
Good evening.
How are you? And how's Mary?
Why, it's Miss Terence, isn't it? Oh, how absolutely ripping to see you again.
And how is Mary?
Well, not too good at the moment, you know. Naturally, very unhappy about all this murder business.
She must be.
I expect you've heard that we're... what the poor describe as being in trouble.
Of course. And as a good socialist, I can't help rejoicing when a peer gets embroiled. And I mean, all this medieval ritual of being tried at the House of Lords makes the whole thing so ridiculous. And it is ridiculous, isn't it? But all the same, I'm very fond of Mary, and I can't help wishing it was someone else's brother.
You were very good friends, weren't you?
Oh, I adored her. So, as I say, I'm terribly sorry. And for you, too. I mean, you don't just sit around shooting animals, do you? I mean, you do work investigating, don't you? I mean, you don't lead a completely useless life.
Well, I try not to.
That's all right, then.
Good. Well, if you can prevail upon yourself to overlook the unfortunate misfortune of my birth and my other deficiencies, perhaps you would honor me by having a spot of dinner with me somewhere.
I'd have loved to, but I promised to be at the club tonight. I mean, there's a meeting at 9. Mr. Coke, the Labour leader, you know. But if you'd like to come along there and dine, I mean, please do. I could smuggle you in.
Would you really have to smuggle me?
Oh, I think so. I mean, they might want to hang you up on a lamppost or something.
Oh, not in England, surely.
This is an international movement.
Oh, well, that's all right, then. May never work here, what?
I'll be a devil and risk it. I do so want to hear all your news.
Yes, why not? I have a guest at my flat, but I'm sure my man has rustled something up.
Cheese?
Ooh. The Stilton is at its best this evening.
Oh, just a little, then.
Some celery? Will you excuse me while I answer the door? Oh. It's Lady Mary, Mr. Parker.
Lady Mary? What a surprise.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Parker. Where's Peter?
Oh, Scotland Yard. Well, you should have left by now.
Will you take anything, Lady Mary?
No.
Mr. Parker?
No, nothing more, Bunter.
I'll bring some coffee later. Your coat, m'lady?
No, it's all right, thank you, Bunter.
Very well, m'lady.
Can't you find Peter? What? He's doing something dreadful. He's all wrong, you see. I must tell him, Philip.
Well,
did anybody ever get into such trouble?
Well, sit down. No, you'll be ill if you cry like that. Have a glass of wine. Try and stop crying. You are crying, aren't you? I mean, it isn't hiccups, is it? I say, Bunter!
Here, my lady, sniff this.
Oh, Bunter, how dare you?
It's only Dr. McKinsey's smelling salts. Your ladyship had better take a drop of brandy.
Yes.
This is the 1800 Napoleon brandy, my lady. There. Please don't snort so, if I may make the suggestion. His lordship would be greatly distressed to think that any of it should be wasted. Did your ladyship dine on the way up?
No.
Most unwise, m'lady, to undertake a long journey on a vacant interior. I will take the liberty of sending in an omelette for your ladyship. Perhaps you would like another little snack, sir, as it's getting late?
Oh, no, thank you, Bunter.
Very good, sir.
You're better now. Well, look. Is there something on your mind?
Yes, there is. It's awfully serious.
Well, then, if you can honour me with your confidence...
Well, I don't quite know whether... Well, tell me, how far have you got? What have you discovered?
Oh, well, dear, I'm afraid I can't very well tell you that. I might accidentally do mischief to an innocent person.
So there's someone you definitely suspect? Well,
indefinitely would be a better word. But look, please do tell me anything you know. We may be suspecting a totally wrong person.
I wouldn't be surprised. Oh, well, what do you want to know?
Well, You were in Paris last February.
Yes.
Do you remember going with Captain Cathcart to a jeweller's in the Rue de la Paix and buying a tortoiseshell comb and a diamond and platinum cat with emerald eyes?
Is that the cat you've been making inquiries about in Riddlesdale?
Yes. Had you lost it? Or was it Captain Cathcart?
If I said it was his...
I believe you. Was it?
No, it was mine.
When did you lose it?
That night.
Where?
Wherever you found it. In the shrubbery. I didn't miss it until later.
Why did you deny it was yours?
I was afraid.
And now?
I'm going to speak the truth.
I'm glad. I believe that at the inquest there were one or two points you didn't tell the truth about, weren't there?
Yes.
Please believe me, I'm very sorry indeed to have to ask these questions. But the terrible position in which your brother's placed...
In which I placed him.
I didn't say that.
I do. I helped put him in jail.
Well, fortunately, there's time to put it all right. May I go on?
Oh, yes.
The shot you said you heard at 3 o'clock, was that true?
No.
But you did hear a shot?
At 11:50.
Was that when you hid something behind the plants in the conservatory?
I hid nothing there.
In the old linen chest on the landing?
My skirt.
Did you go out to meet Cathcart?
Yes.
Who was the other man?
There was no other man.
We saw his footmarks all the way up from the shrubbery to the conservatory.
He must have been some tramp. I know nothing at all about him.
We have proof that he was there. Of what he did, how he escaped. That man in the Burberry, Lady Mary, was the man who shot Cathcart.
That's impossible.
Why impossible?
Because I shot Dennis Cathcart myself.
We're in quite good time for dinner. There's a couple of seats over there by the serving hatch. Can you squeeze past?
Yes, I think so. Excuse me.
What have you done?
I'm just trying to get my seat.
There you are, comrade. Take my hand and step onto the table.
Mind my suit.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Now, jump down and into your seat.
Yeah, thank you. Well, united we so far.
Do you like soup?
It depends. What kind of soup?
Oh, just soupy soup. Lots of bits of things in it. Nourishing and cheap.
Good. Well, I'll try anything once.
I'll get it. The woman next to you is Erica Heath Warburton, the writer, you know. And the man who helped you climb over the table is the lecturer. Would you like some black bread with the soup?
Yes, of course. In for a penny, as you say.
Don't move. I'll be back in a
minute. I agree. But did you ever know a sincere emotion express itself in a subordinate clause?
Joyce has freed us from the superstition of syntax.
Scenes which make emotional history should ideally be expressed in animal squeaks.
Ah, D.H. Lawrence formula.
We need a new notation. Have you heard Lionel Snoots recite his own verse to the Tom Tom and the Penny Whistle?
No, but it's on my list.
Here's the soup. You didn't give me the bread, comrade.
Here. Yeah.
Here's the bread. It's the real thing.
Yeah, it certainly looks it. It gives a new meaning to the phrase, man cannot live by bread alone.
Millions have to.
Ah, yes. I can understand it if one has to.
Mary had the right ideas. I mean, worked so hard for the cause. She was secretary to the propaganda branch for 6 months.
Was she now?
She was a tremendous help to Mr. Goyles, to say nothing of the nursing during the war. Of course, I don't approve of England's attitude to the war, but Mary certainly...
Who is Mr. Goyles?
Oh, one of our leading men. Quite young. But the government is really afraid of him. I expect he'll be here tonight. He's been lecturing in the north, but I believe he's back now.
Look, I say, excuse me, but your beads in the soup.
Are they? Perhaps they'll flavour it. I'm afraid the cooking isn't very good here, but the subscription is so small.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted you. You were telling me about Mr. Goyle.
Oh, yes. Everybody thought she was going to marry him, but it seemed to fall through. I mean, she left town. Do you know about it?
That was the fellow, was it? Yes, well, my people didn't altogether see it, you know. Though Mr. Goyles wasn't quite the son-in-law they'd take to him. I wasn't there myself, but, well, that was what I gathered.
Another example of the absurd old-fashioned tyranny of parents. I mean, you wouldn't think it could still be possible in post-war England.
I wasn't parents so much as my brother, actually. Owing to my late father's circumscribed ideas of what was owing to women, my brother had the handling of Mary's money till she marries with his consent.
Oh.
I don't say it's a good plan. In fact, I happen to think it's a rotten one. But, well, there it is.
Monstrous!
Excuse me, your beads.
Oh, I don't care about my beads. I don't like the soup either. I'm so angry about these feudal ideas of your father's.
Too late for him to change them, I'm afraid. He's dead now, you know.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, well, after all, what is money?
Oh, nothing, of course. But if you've been brought up having it, it's a bit awkward to drop it suddenly. Like Barb's, you know.
Well, I don't understand how it could have made any difference to Mary. She liked being a worker. We once tried living in a workman's cottage for 8 weeks. 5 of us on 18 shillings a week. It was a marvellous experience. On the very edge of the New Forest.
In the winter?
Well, no. We felt we'd better not begin with winter. But we had 9 wet days, and the kitchen chimney smoked all the time. The wood came out of the forest, you see, and it was soaking wet.
Must have been uncommonly interesting.
It was an experience I shall never forget. One felt so close to the earth. I mean, so primitive. Shall we have coffee? Why, isn't that quite extraordinary?
What?
There is Mr. Goyles. Just walked in.
Really? Would you introduce me?
Of course. I'll ask him if he'll join us for coffee. Mr. Goyles! Yoo-hoo! I say, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine, Mary Wimsey's brother. Will you join us for... Oh, really? Dashed off. But he can't be missing the lecture. Where are you going, Mr. Goyles?
Oh, excuse me, I must have a word with him. I say, did you see a tall, fair man just run out of here?
Yes, Governor. Run up that alley behind the hippodrome. What's up? Pinched your wallet or something?
Yeah, Mr. Goyles! Mr. Goyles, come back here a moment, would you? I want a word with you. Oh! Oh!
Cool. You shot him.
In that episode of Clouds of Witness, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Bunter, Peter Jones, the Dowager Duchess of Denver, Patricia Routledge, Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe, Lady Mary Wimsey, Mariah Aitken, Miss Tarrant, Miriam Margulies, Dr. Thorpe, Sir Andrew and the Man, David Sinclair, the Woman and the Cockney, Bonnie Harren. Mary, Quite Contrary, was adapted by Peter Jones and Tanya Leven from the book Clouds of Witness by Dorothy L. Sayers. The program was produced by Simon Brett.
Or at the same time next week, remember that?